This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast, episode 31. We haven't forgotten about you. We're just all super busy.
Super busy.
See, you hear Ronnie in the background? He's having lunch. He's so dedicated, he's recording this podcast while stuffing his face.
That is correct.
I'm recording this podcast on vacation because I have nothing better to do. So I'm recording like 80 hours worth of podcast this week because, you know, it is what it is. Anyways, welcome. It's been a while. Nice to see you. Come take a seat on this not-so-comfy couch.
Good thing you're on that podcast, too, because then we get plagiarism.
I am on a very comfy chair, though. I got a new chair for my birthday, and it's freaking awesome. I could probably fall asleep on it. Anyways, we're not here to talk about my chairs or how Ronnie's jealous of my vacation. We're here to talk about Aftershock books. And before you say, well, wait a second, where's Jack? Jack started a new job. He's very busy. So I think Jack's going to be taking a little break from the podcast. And it's going to be Ronnie and myself for a little bit.
That's right.
Maybe we can get somebody else to join every once in a while.
Maybe.
Maybe. I'll think about it. Anyways, we got a ton of books. We got 4 books to talk about. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's go with Shipwreck first.
Oh, I'm surprised. I thought you were going to say something else. All right, let's do Shipwreck first. So first up, we've got Shipwreck. Ugh. Ooh. Yikes.
Easy for you to say.
Can't talk on my vacation. Yikes. Shipwreck number 5. Finally. This came out 2 weeks ago, so yes. We're behind. But you know what? We're recording like every 2 weeks. So, you know, it happens. Shipwreck number 5 is Warren Ellis writing, Phil Hester on art, Eric Gapsert on inks, Mark Englert on colors, and Marshall Dillon on letters. And I don't ever know how to recap this book. I guess we learn more about what the hell's happening, kind of, but not really.
Right.
I mean, we do.
It's kind of like one of those, the more questions get answered, the more questions get asked.
Yes. I gotta say, this is a really, really quick read, because a lot of, I don't know, like the first third of the book, they're all like full page spreads. I'm like, is full page spread a thing? Did I just make that up?
I don't know.
Double page spread is a thing.
Yes, I would say that that's probably a thing.
Okay, full page spread. If not, Nerdy Legion 2017 trademark copyright. And we learn a little bit more about the crash. I love these first few pages. Like, they were super quick to read because it's like one panel per page or like two maybe. But they're freaking awesome, man. Like, Phil Hester, man. I got to tell you. You're my idol. Phil Hester, you're my idol. He's been doing that 100 Kirby's thing all week. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter. If you don't, you should. At Phil Hester.
I do.
Oh, my God. They're freaking awesome. And I just love the art. It's so stylized. A lot of this reminds me of, I don't know, like Hellboy maybe? Early Hellboy?
Yeah, I was going to say Hellboy or like Hellblazer even.
Ooh, Hellblazer, yeah. You're right. You're right. When Jenkins was doing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally see that. So yeah, we learn a little bit more about the crash. We learn a little bit more about the fact that this world, they haven't named this world, right?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
This world knew that Earth was building the ship to come into their alternate reality. And they sent a spy to try to stop the whole thing from happening. But they kind of want the tech. And there's a few different factions, too, because we get to see a couple characters from previous issues that our main character met, and they talk about how they want the tech for themselves. That's the way I read it, at least. Did you read it that way?
Yeah, that's how I read it.
But it's like for personal gain, though, right? It's not like a government thing.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's personal gain to get back and forth between realities.
Yeah, because the one character was the spider lady, mm-hmm. and she just wants it to, like, rob places.
Yeah, basically.
Like, she wants to teleport in, rob a place, and teleport out, mm-hmm. Regardless of reality. So that's cool. We also see how he got his burnt arm. I like that. That was a good page.
Yeah, we had a lot of good character progression here mm-hmm. that we hadn't seen.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Like, the first three issues were a lot of, like, what the F is happening? And then issue four, you got, like, some basic setup for the backstory, and now that's being explored.
Right. And for Cartwright, also, like, the first couple issues, he seemed like a Stone Cold type badass, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then here we realize that he's actually a coward.
He is. Because that's the reason he wanted to build this thing, was to get the hell out of Dodge.
Right.
He didn't really care about saving humanity from global warming and whatever else is affecting Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was a cool twist.
Yeah, that was great. That was great. I don't know. This was interesting. I wish it would continue on, like, a set schedule.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I know Ellis is busy. Ellis gets busy. Okay, this is not like a surprise for comic book readers. If you've been reading comics for a long time, especially Ellis comics, you know the Ellis thing.
Right. The only thing would be like Kevin Smith writing it, right? Because we'd get the first four issues and then never finish it.
Well, and then it wouldn't be good. Oh, snap!
Watch your mouth.
Oh, snap! No, Kevin Smith had a good run for a little while, but I don't know what's going on with that man nowadays.
Yeah.
He announces something, and then it never happens.
Yeah, there's too many irons in the fire and not good time management.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, question. At the end, mm-hmm. we have this guy with the camels.
Yeah.
In a spacesuit.
Is he in a spacesuit?
It looks like a spacesuit to me.
Are you talking that gets in the car?
No. He doesn't get in the car. As they're driving through this wasteland, like, they drive by this one guy who's, like, herding camels.
Oh, okay, okay.
Right before they get to the destroyed bridge.
Okay.
Have we seen that guy before? He didn't look familiar, but he's in a spacesuit. Maybe he's part of the mission.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen him before.
And then you have a recap of a bunch of characters that we saw previously, including uh-huh. the rock monument thing that uh-huh. Cartwright ran into in issue one, I believe. Uh-huh. And it looks like it might be a living thing, because he's got a skull head inside it, and he's standing with all the other characters, so maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. And then, like, there's the box-headed children.
Yeah.
Running from the burning church.
Mm-hmm.
And then the inspector shows up at the end.
The inspector right? does show up, because I think he's part of the government conspiracy, right, to sabotage the original mission.
Yeah, right.
And so he wants to find the teleporter machine and kill Cartwright, apparently, because he's on his way to a future crime scene. Yours. Dun-dun-dun! Yeah, this is a good issue. I dug it. I gotta tell you, this is gonna be one of those books that will read fantastic in trade. And if you're reading it in singles as it comes out, like, there's a lot of questions, but I think reading it in one sitting, it's gonna be freaking awesome. And I believe the next issue is the last one.
I think so. I think it's only a 6-issue mini.
Yep. Issue 6, Rescue. So, will he get rescued? I'm gonna say no.
Yep.
That's my assumption. No.
Yep.
But that's what it's called, Rescue. So overall, really interesting. I wish it would come out on time every month, but I get it. So let's rate this one up. Where's your head at?
I'm going to go with 3.75. Just because Hester's art is awesome, so that gets the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a quick read, like you said before.
Yep.
But on the high note, there was a lot of developmental stuff that happened.
Yep.
So, and it kind of makes me wish that there wasn't just six issues.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. The world's very interesting. Yeah. I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to go with a 4. Ooh, maybe even higher than that. A 4.25. But, small caveat. For me, the art's a 5. And the story is maybe like a 3.5. So I'll just average it out to a 4.25. 4.333 repeating is my answer.
Sounds good.
I'm totally agreeing with you. And I hope we get a nice resolution with issue 6. I hope all the questions are answered. Because I don't believe that we'll see a shipwreck too, as much as I would love that.
Right.
Cool. Let's go to the next one. Let's do Jimmy's Bastards.
Sounds good.
Jimmy's Bastards number 3. This is Garth Ennis writing, Russ Brown on art, John Calise on colors, Rob Steen on letters. And I don't even know, man. I don't even care to recap this book.
Okay.
Jimmy's just kind of an a-hole and everything's funny to him. But stuff's going down in this issue. So after the events of issue 2, where all Jimmy's bastards start killing or trying to kill Jimmy, just get like half of this issue is just him shooting his kids.
Yeah, and him not knowing, and them screaming out like "Dad," and then boom.
Yes, and then his partner, of course, knows because she is one of his kids.
Yep,
and. She kind of gives him a little bit of information, which I don't think he takes seriously.
No, I don't think so.
We get to see the main bad, who I'm assuming is the oldest kid, who looks exactly like Jimmy.
Yeah,
and I think this is one of the reasons why we were a little confused in the first issue, right?
Yeah, I think Jack had that confusion in the first issue, right?
Yep. And he's just a total, like, he is an exact evil version of Jimmy. Because he's completely aloof and doesn't care about anything.
Yep. Yeah.
You know? Ultimately, the goal is just to get rid of Jimmy. And he doesn't care who he kills or, like, whatever. And everything's funny to him. So that's interesting. Anything else you want to talk about on this?
Well, my question is, like, Jimmy's partner, his daughter, is actually supposed to be like, right?
Yeah.
But do you think that she's actually leaning towards Jimmy's side and figuring out that, I mean, even though he is an asshole, that he's not really that bad and that he's just clueless? Or do you think she's still on the side of her siblings?
That's a good question. No, I think she is on Jimmy's side. Because, I mean, this would have been the perfect time to get rid of Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if it wasn't for her help, he would not have made it out of this place. And, I mean, I think she saves him a couple times, like people coming in from behind him, she shoots him. And, I mean, she's a total badass. She's killing people left and right.
Yep.
And I mean, even towards the end, when they find the guy, the African guy.
Uh huh.
Like, she's the one that saves him from getting shot.
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't know if that was there on purpose, or, you know, once you're deep undercover, you don't want to show your cards too quick into the scheme of things. So I didn't know if that was just her still being undercover.
I mean, I could see that, but again, like,
I mean, because she just shot, like, their informant, basically. She didn't shoot, you know, one of the main bad kids, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So, but, I mean, like, she's covering, like, she's burning bodies to cover their tracks.
Yeah.
You know, she shoots the guy, the informant. But it's like a non-lethal shot, right? So he would fall off the boat, and he's saved from the sharpshooters because of that.
Right.
And that also causes Jimmy to be saved because he goes after the informant as he's falling down. So I don't know. It seems to me like maybe initially she was in to lure Jimmy into the trap, but now as they're progressing, maybe she does genuinely feel like the mission is important. And whether she tries to save Jimmy in the end, I don't know. But I think right now, for the greater good, let's just say,
right,
she is doing the right thing. And the right, right thing is keeping Jimmy alive.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yep. So, overall, ratings. Ratings.
Dude, I still love this book. I know some people don't because of, but I'm going to give it a solid 4 just for the fun factor and the witty one-liners and just the... I mean, it's not... I guess it can be complex, but it's just a fun read all over.
Mm-hmm.
So, 4 for me.
Well, and like I said, I've compared this to the TV show Archer.
Yep.
It's very much like it, and I dig it. I think Ennis has done James Bond before, right? He's written the actual book.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, he's very familiar with the tropes and stuff, and I like how he's playing upon them. And I totally understand why some people don't like this book, but maybe they're looking too much into it. This is like just a fun book.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go lower. I think I'm gonna go like a 3.25. I like it. It's fun, but it's not like one of those things where I feel like I have to be reading. You know.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Yep.
Whenever I get to it, I get to it.
Yep.
Where do we wanna go next?
What do we got? The Normals and Animosity left?
Yep.
Let's go with Animosity next, then.
Is that because you just want to gush about Adam Glass? Is that what it is?
Maybe.
So Animosity number 9 is Marguerite Bennett on writing duties, Raphael De La Torre on art, Rob Schrager on colors, The Schwag, yep, and Marshall Dillon on letters.
Marshall Dillon's pretty busy.
He is busy, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's everywhere. Good for him. You know what? This past week was Comic Book Letterer Appreciation Day. Marshall Dillon, we appreciate you. We do.
We do.
Anyways, the crew continues their journey to California. So now we're in Virginia. And... I'm not going to recap this, but I found it really, really interesting. Because from the first issue, we have wondered, was the rise something that affected only animals?
Mm-hmm.
Or did it also affect insects? And finally, in this issue, we learned that yes, it did affect insects. And I got to say, the whole thing with the beehive was
yep.
clever as hell.
Yep.
Clever as hell. So as our crew is going through Virginia, they come upon a dam. And there's some nice character building, too, by the way. So the goat, it speaks Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he's teaching her how to speak Spanish. And they're talking about the flood and fire and all that, which I thought was interesting, the words that are used. Because there are no Ark references.
Right, correct.
And it's fitting because all you have is this... a guy, a girl, and a bunch of animals. And yeah, it's not two of a kind, but all the animals are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was interesting and very reflective of the kind of themes that the book is discussing. And as she's learning Spanish, she learns the word for fire, fuego, and she sees fire in the distance. There's smoke coming out from the woods. And at first, Sandor thinks that it's... what was it, like the wolf pack or whatever that was following them for a little while?
Yes.
And so they go and see what's going on, and they come upon a dam. And the dam's not on fire. Like, there's fires underneath it, but they're really just building a lot of smoke because the entire dam is a giant beehive.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, I like bees. Bees are good. You know what I'm saying? Like, they pollinate flowers. Oh, I get it, because they sting, whatever. That sucks. But you know
well,
what?
Well, I'm allergic, so that's
oh, okay. Well, so you would get the hell out of Dodge here.
Yes.
I think it's interesting. You know, bees are good for the environment, I guess. Yeah. They're going extinct. And I find the fact that there's this giant freaking beehive on a dam freaking mm-hmm. awesome. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so there's a bunch of humans creating this smoke because they want to trap bees for some kind of purpose. We don't know. And the way that the whole thing is set up, it looks like these guys are up to no good. Okay?
Right.
And we do see some of the bees. Of course, when the bee stings, it dies. And so yeah. you get a couple panels of bees trying to sting these people and dying. And I mean, the guys are well protected, so the bee stings aren't affecting them. But our crew sees this and they're like, you know, the bees are dying. We need to go help them. We can't let them die. So the animals rush in to try to save the bees. And the humans kind of fight them off a little bit. The little raccoon, what kind of animal is he? He's not a raccoon.
No, it's some, he's like a...
It's some kind of monkey.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, he's not a monkey because he says that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I can't remember the name of the animal, but he gets knocked down. Benjamin's his name. The animals save him, though. And the humans end up running off. As they're running off, the beehive turns into a giant floating demon head.
Yeah.
Which is freaking awesome.
Yep.
And, of course, the hive works as one. And so, of course, it makes perfect sense that they would speak as one entity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it says, you tried to rescue your queen, like, she's the only one. You need to rescue your queen. And pretty much the bees end up holding the humans hostage and tell the animals that they need to go rescue the queen and all their sisters because the humans are evil and they're killing the hive.
Yeah. And out of that, you get my favorite quote of the book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Which is?
Which is from Sandor. And he's running to rescue the bees or to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, he says, I'll give these chuckle fucks a little more than a bee sting. That is, I just wanted to call everybody a chuckle fuck from then on.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's awesome regardless, though. I mean, like you said, the whole... Of course they would all act all together because that's what bees do.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I would assume, like, if we saw ants, which we might later on, that they would react and do the same thing.
Absolutely.
So...
Well, and then we do... So the hive sends a couple of their... like, what do they call them? I don't know, but they sent a couple of bees with them. Oh,
yeah,
the scout bees.
Scouts.
The scout bees.
Yeah.
They sent a couple of bees with them, and when the bee talks, it's like barely legible, right? Because it's one bee, and so it's like a squeaky little voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, that's how I read it in my head too. Like, yeah,
right.
We can speak for ourselves. You know,
yeah.
Like a munchkin or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a lot of information from the scout. You know, the humans aren't after the honey. They're literally just taking bees back to wherever they're from. And, you know, she talks about
that. For whatever reason, right?
Yeah, for whatever reason. That we don't know.
Right.
And so, you know, with the help of the scouts, they end up finding the town. And from the looks of it, they're not up to, like, shady business. You know what I mean? Like, they're in a farm, the animals and humans are working together, they have crops growing. Like, it doesn't seem to be, like, a bunch of evil humans. Because every like, mission of humans that we've seen before, they're just, like, a bunch of shady people trying to take advantage of the animals. And we don't have that here. You know, you get a couple panels of the animals talking to each other, like, the cow is helping the guy farm, the crows are kind of, like... spies, you know, they scout the area to make sure that there's no danger. Really interesting stuff. And it turns out that it's an orchard, I think an apple orchard, but they don't say specifically. Which then led me to believe that, hey, that's the reason they have these bees. You know, they're not trying to kill or kidnap the bees. They want the bees to help pollinate their orchard.
Right.
Now, why they couldn't ask nicely, I don't know. But maybe it's just the way that the beehive works that just wouldn't happen.
Right.
Although it seems to me that, like, the bees pollinating the orchards would be good for the hive as well.
Yeah.
So there has to be more to that story.
Well, and also the thing that didn't make sense, I mean, I'm not a beeologist or whatever they're called, but if you take one or two of the bees, or say five, it still wouldn't be the same result without the queen bee there, right?
Correct. Yep.
And there's usually only one queen bee, because that's why she's the queen bee.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they've actually thought this through or not.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm not saying Marguerite, I'm saying...
Yeah, the people.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Marguerite's thinking way ahead on these things. You know, she's developing ideas quite a bit before she puts them on the page, so...
Right.
Yeah, so as this is happening, Jessie falls down, and the group from the orchard come up to her, and one of the animals in the group is talking to her, and it turns out that it's Mittens.
Yes.
The cat that lived upstairs from her in New York City.
Yep.
So, I mean, Mittens wasn't bad, so this group has to be awesome.
So you would think. What do you... So, from here, I'm just kind of... I don't know. For reading so many comics and so many post-apocalyptic style comics, mm-hmm. I'm trained to be leery of everybody.
Of course.
You know, the whole DTA, don't trust anyone type
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think Jesse and Sandor and their group has really done that yet. I mean, they might be a little leery since the last encounter, but
right.
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if you look at that last panel, Sandor looking over, I can't tell if Sandor is weary of finding Mittens, because he almost looks a little sad.
Yeah.
And I wonder if maybe he and Mittens had a thing.
Really?
I was wondering about that. So, like, I don't know if he looks sad because they found Mittens and maybe Jessie wants to stay here now because she was so excited to see Mittens.
See, I just thought it was like a cat and dog play reference, like where Mittens was Jessie's friend as well, and so Sandor being a dog wants to, like, jealousy type thing, where he wants Jessie all to himself.
Uh-huh.
And now it's split with a cat, you know.
I could see that.
That's how I read the look, anyway.
Yeah, I could see that. That's, Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's very possible. You want to rate this one up?
I'm going to give it the solid 4. Because from issue 1 till now, it's been one of my favorite books from Aftershock.
Yeah.
And it continues to hit those bars.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a solid 4. There's a lot happening here. The art is consistently good. The writing is consistently good. Fun book. I love it. This is actually one of the few books surviving my infamous culling of comic books.
Oh.
I'll be talking about that sometime this week on Nerdy Legion.
Awesome.
Yes. All right, so the last book we have is The Normals, number 4. This is, of course, written by friend of the show Adam Glass. And mm-hmm. The art is Dennis Calero, Adriano Augusto on colors, Corey Breen on letters, and Wando always doing the covers. I love Wando.
Yep.
Oh, man. Anyways, you want to recap this one?
I can. If I can. It's been a while since I read it, so.
Oh, shame on you.
So, recap. It's the road to nowhere. And they're on the boat, and he still doesn't... The kids are shell-shocked, basically, mm-hmm. of what just happened. And his wife still doesn't know him, but she knows the kids. And they still don't believe that they're robots. He believes it because of his fingernail.
It's got a USB port in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see. And they start getting clues of where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they start finding the different clues and follow the different clues, then the last clue is they have to go to 754, whatever the address is.
Yes.
And there's
they find that on the billboard.
Yep.
Yep.
And there's the hazmat and coroner and ambulance people there.
Yep.
And that's how it ends. Dun dun dun.
You missed the one part where they shoot the clown in the bathroom.
Oh yes. That was great.
I don't know what the deal was with that, but it was funny. I dug that. Yeah, this was interesting because now it has me believing that the doctor that helped them in mm-hmm. the past couple of issues, mm-hmm. he didn't do it out of goodwill. I think right now, to me, it seems a little obvious that the company that created these androids can't find these people. And finding the normals was kind of their break. And so giving them the tools to go find the rest of the androids is going to be easier for them. Because now all they need to do is follow the normals. And then they will be able to find the rest of the androids and eliminate them.
Well, in this issue, they're one step ahead, though.
Well, yes. But so that's the thing, right? If you follow this family... They're not professionals, right? And
right,
they don't have all the resources that this company has.
Right, right.
So even just getting them in the vicinity of where they need to be is going to be a huge help for them. Although really, if you think about it, I mean, if this family can find the androids with just like a scrapbook, why yeah. can't the company find them? You know what I'm
scrapbook
saying?
Scrapbook and an iPad, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yep, exactly.
And they did get a car from Rosie Perez.
Yes.
That's who she looks like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was cool. And we get to see who the big bad is.
Yeah.
And she looks like she's, I don't know, 21.
Yeah.
And yet she is the CEO of this giant tech company.
Mm-hmm.
Which really, like, that's not surprising. Because if you look at tech companies, like, all those guys... You know, when they start IPOing, they're like in their early 20s. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I could totally see that. But I like the back and forth there, because there's like two pages of Dungeons and Dragons talk.
Yeah.
And you know they talk about like what class they play and like all this stuff. And he's like, yeah. "Does it look like I play second edition?" And I thought that was funny, because
yeah.
you know people that have been playing D&D, like they kind of laugh at anything that's not the original.
Right.
So I thought that was cool. And as we get to meet her, she is about to give a TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool.
Yeah. And then also another cool thing to revert back to Killing the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
When his son asks him if he really eats beavers. Remember that?
Yes.
Because the thing says beaver eater.
Yeah, the truck's got a beaver eater truck. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, sure does.
Yep.
It's like one of those awkward parent moments, even though they're robots, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or androids, whatever.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, this is cool. I dug it. I like following this family around. I'm really curious now about this Emma West thing, though. Like, what her deal is.
Yeah.
Really, really interested. And
the glasses guy that's a vegan.
Yes. Yeah, what was the deal with that? So he bribes the cop with the cop's like child pornography browser history, just to get info on where the vegetarian restaurants are.
Well, and also to make him not remember or.
Oh, that's right. That's what it was.
Nothing happened there.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, this is real good.
It's great.
It could be a sci-fi show.
It should be a show.
Yeah.
Is it going to have Rainn Wilson in it? Is that what you
said?
We'll
see. That's Rough Rider, sir.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But I could see Rain playing the dad, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
He was good on Backstrom.
Rain's going to be in the new Star Trek show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways. So
are you saying he's too busy to be Teddy Roosevelt? Is that what you're saying?
He might be. I don't know. Let's rate this one up.
Go for it.
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. I'm going to give this a 3.75. I like it. I like that we're always getting new info. I love Adam's writing style because there's always something happening. There's never a dull moment. And this is a great series. It's a great series. I hope everyone's reading it.
Yep. I'm going to stick with my solid 4 for the episode. Just because, pretty much like what you said, there's like the beaver hunter or the beaver eater one-liners, and then like him trying to jog his wife's memory, I guess.
Yep.
And talking about the black lung, and you know she doesn't understand, obviously. So, yep, strong issue. Always one of the ones I want to read in my stack first when it comes out. So. Yep.
Agreed. I think that's it. Let's see. So this week we have World Reader number 6, which I believe is the last issue.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Animosity the Rise number 3. That should be interesting.
Yes.
And then next week we have Insects number 13 and Baby Teeth number 4.
Yep.
So next episode, that's what we'll be covering if Ronnie catches up on Insects.
I'm pretty much caught up on
it. Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
So we might have to do a bonus episode like Retro Aftershock Central Pod where we just talk about Insects.
Hilarious. All right, you can find us all on Twitter at Rambar316, at GeekVon, at Jack Sutherland, at Aftershock Pod, and check out the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/AftershockComicFans. We're done for this week. Have a good one.